Doc, in his new persona of Joseph Jordan, returned to them once more that night. It had been dark for several hours, and the outside was lit only by the glow of lamps that gave away the location of the Inuit huts and cabins. Some had shielded windows, but most were secure in their cover among the woods of the downland slopes, and couldn't be bothered to blacken their lights. Clothed, alert, and still a little confused over what had happened during the preceding day, they were now waiting with strained nerves for what would happen next. More than that, they were kept awake by the gnawing in their guts and their parched throats. The herbs of the sacrificial meal that had earlier been forced upon them had eased through their systems, and it left behind an almost maddening desire to eat and drink. Yet they had not been fed, nor given water, since Doc had entered with Thompson and McPhee.
No.
How'd they expect us to fight when starving?
Jack hunkered down and hugged himself, as though he could make the pang subside by squeezing them from his body.
An army marches on its stomach.
Hey, everybody, come take a look at this.
What is it, Christy?
Just look. Doc may not be Doc, but it looks like he still wants to look after us.
The man, now known as Joseph Jordan, was striding across the center of the ville from the direction of the cookhouse. He was at the head of three Inuit women, one carrying a steaming pot, another with plates and cups, and a third with a pitcher of fluid. What it might be was unclear, but it was steaming as gently as the pot carried ahead of it. The door swung open to reveal a smiling Jordan.
Bet you thought we'd forgotten you. How could we expect you to join with us and fight if you didn't have food in your bellies?
He stood to one side and ushered the three women into the hut. The pot was a deer stew with stodgy dumplings that bubbled on the surface before turning and sinking into the morass. There were vegetables and vegetable matter of an indeterminate origin floating in the stew, which smelled slightly rank, as though the meat had been left just a little too long before being thrown into the pot. The pitcher had an herb infusion that smelled sweet. It was light brown in color, and the warmth almost radiated from the surface toward them. The Inuit women put the pot, the pitcher, and the plates and cups in the center of the room.
Come, enjoy!
Jordan gestured toward the meal. A frown of puzzlement momentarily crossed his brow when they held back, until the realization hit him.
Of course. You'd be stupid to just take it after what's been done to you before.
Jordan took a plate and cup from the pile. He helped himself to some of the stew and took a few mouthfuls, washing it down with the herbal tea.
Does that perhaps reassure you?
Only if you stay here and we see what it does or doesn't do to you. Be too easy to go outside and puke it right now before it had any effect.
A sly grin crossed Jordan's face.
I like the cut of your jib, son. It's a fair point. I'll stay a while and talk. You women can go.
When the three Inuit women had gone, he turned a shrewd eye on Ryan.
Now, I'm thinking that perhaps there was more reason to you wanting me to stay than just to test your meal.
You're right about that. I'm not going to bullshit you. There's a few things I need to know.
Need? Do you think you're in a position to demand?
Maybe not, but it won't stop me asking.
Fair. Go ahead, then.
Ryan looked at the others. They were torn between the need to know and the need to fill their aching bellies. Even the rank smell of the stewed deer meat enough to get their juices flowing.
Why do you think we'll come with you and fight in a firefight that isn't ours?
Because you have little choice. It's the only way you'll get your weapons back. And where else are you going to go?
Maybe we'd have somewhere to go, maybe not. But what's to stop us going anyway? Maybe we'd rather take our chances than take part in someone else's firefight.
Jordan screwed up his face, as though trying to mentally dig out some piece of vital information.
No, not you. I know that all of you are fighters. Good ones at that. I know that you have a sense of right and wrong, and you can be relied upon to back each other up. And I know that I'm included in that, or the man who was in this shell before me.
He stopped, bewilderment crossing his face.
How would I know that? Why is that still there? Should that not be something that did not remain, that went with the man who...
He shook his head.
Lord, these are demons sent to tempt me from my past. A test, perhaps, from the Almighty to prove my faith.
Ryan pressed home with little advantage he could see.
So you wouldn't come with us if we were to make a break for it when our blasters are back with us? Break for the redoubt and get the hell out of here?
The what? What is this of which you speak?
Jordan put his hand to his temple, as though pressure were building. The gentle touch became a grinding knuckle, skin whitening at the temple around the area of pressure.
No. No. I must do the Lord's work. Lori? I have purpose. Reborn like the phoenix. A test, don't you see?
Doc! Doc, it's me. Think about who you are, where you came from, how you got here. Remember that you are Dr. Theophilus Tanner from...
No! You're not going to trap me with your cleverness. I am Joseph Jordan, and I have been sent to do the Lord's work and redeem these people who are descended from my kith and kin. This is all still strange to me, and I will not allow you to make the strange seem even stranger. Your food and drink is good, as you can see from the way in which I still stand before you. Now eat and drink, for tomorrow we begin our assault on Fairbanks. Now I bid you good night. Until tomorrow.
Holding himself unnaturally erect, as though every movement had to be forced from his body, Jordan turned and stormed through the door.
Well, what do you make of that?
Whatever it is, possession or madness, I don't care. Doc's in there somewhere. Just for a moment.
Yeah, I thought he was coming back to us. But whatever it is, it's keeping the real Doc clamped down. Which means we can't leave the old bastard to these people. And it sure as shit he won't come with us if we make a break. Even if we force him, he'd be wanting to get away and back to them.
So what do? Just walk into chill foam?
We make sure that we aren't walking into anything. We bide our time, we go along with them, and we see how Doc's doing. When the time is right, then we take him with us.
Even if it means getting into a bloodbath?
Even that, I guess. We do it and make sure that every other bastard gets chilled other than us.
That's not going to be easy. Even assuming they give us all our hardware back, and not just some of it.
Fire blast and fuck it. When has it ever been easy? Best thing we can do is actually fill our bellies, quench our thirst, and wait for the morning. See where it takes us.
Thompson and McPhee had been arguing since sunup. The shaman had been waiting for the Inuit chief when he came out of his cabin.
Not like you to be up and working so early.
Never mind that shit. I've got something to talk to you about.
McPhee took the chief by the arm and led him away from the cabin. Whatever was itching at the medicine man, he didn't want to risk Jordan catching wind of it.
Don't take much to guess what it's about. Don't want someone to hear, eh? You were the one who told me he was the real deal, so...
It's not about him. Not really. Him I don't doubt, but... Tell me, Chief, do you feel good about him wanting the others to take part in this?
He says he remembers them being good fighters. From the time before he came into that body. Shit, we know that they are anyway. And he figures that they'll go along with him because of who he used to be.
That's just it, though. He ain't who he used to be, is he? He might have some memories left in his brain from that time, but he ain't the mad old coat they brought with him. So why would they stick with someone who, when you think about it, they don't actually know? Don't say that hasn't crossed your mind. You'd have to be pretty stupid not to think about it. And if you're anything, you ain't that.
I hope you mean that. Jordan told me that he spoke to them last night, and that they agreed to come with us and fight. Even if we leave hardly anyone here to look after the veil while we're gone, we still don't number that many. Not against the size of Fairbanks. We need them.
Do we? You think I'm going to be the only one who's not sure about them being involved? Fuck's sake! We were ready to carve them up this time yesterday, and now we're supposed to think that they'll go along with us just like that?
You got a better idea? Jordan wants them. We need them. He's been sent to us. You put it together and see what else you can make from it. Only fits one way.
Have it your way. You're chief, and there ain't shit I can say to change your mind if that's really how you want it. But don't expect everyone to accept it that easily. I trust Jordan, but not the others. There are some who may find it hard to even trust him if they're part of the deal. Got to think about that. Do you really want to send us into a firefight where not everyone will be totally committed?
They will be because I tell them. I have the power, and they accept that. They'll have to trust me.
McPhee studied his chief closely. The Inuit's bland features betrayed no flicker of doubt, but the shaman wondered if, behind the impassive facade, the chief was as confident of his power of the people as he claimed. McPhee hoped so. He would find out soon enough, at any rate. As the sun rose higher, more of the Inuit began to emerge from their dwellings to go about their early morning chores, with the smell of food coming from the cookhouse, carried on wafts of steam. The chief stood at the middle of the bill, watching them, McPhee at his side. It was obvious from the respective postures of both chief and shaman that something was about to happen, and an air of expectation swept through the bill. It increased when Jordan emerged from the chief's cabin and strode over to where the two Inuit elders stood. He exchanged a few words of greeting and noted the ambivalence of the shaman, something he figured he may need to get to the bottom of before too long. But right now there was serious business to attend to. As he watched, Thompson beckoned Macindoe over to him. The hunter and Sekhmen was one of Thompson's most trusted warriors, and he entrusted to him the task of bringing the companions into the center of the vill, while some of his men rounded up the tribe. The hunter moved swiftly, detailing his men to fetch the tribe members from their chores and assemble them in the center. A few words passed around were enough to bring the curious and expectant Inuit into the rapidly filling open space. Meanwhile, Macindoe sent one of his men to gather the weaponry taken from the companions, now stored in the vill's armory. This done, he went across to the hut where they had passed the night. Inside, Jack had been watching the Inuit elders and had reported what appeared to be some kind of disagreement between them. He had continued to observe while Macindoe was called to them, and the Sekhmen had instituted the gathering of the tribe.
Chief wants you now in the middle. Everyone's gathering. Guess it's something big.
Without waiting for them, he turned and walked away, leaving the door gaping wide. Christie gave Ryan a puzzled glance.
Guess we're back in favor. Think Doc said anything?
Can't see how we could have got the word across to them, but maybe it doesn't matter. If Thompson says something, then they all jump.
I believe it when I see it, but I guess we should just roll with it for now.
Just take it as it comes.
Ryan led them out of the hut and toward the gathering of the tribe. They walked slowly, cautiously, not sure of how they would be received. Those Inuit who were in their path parted to let them through, and from the expressions on their faces, those that could be read, it seemed that they felt much the same. When they reached the center, Thompson and McPhee acknowledged them with a nod, and Jordan spared them a few words of greeting. It seemed that the personality in Doc Tanner's body lacked the garrulous qualities of the previous inhabitant. It was only when the chief was sure that the whole of the tribe was assembled, waiting for words from Macindoe that his men had made sure all were present, that he began. In a few words, he told them of what he had discussed with Jordan the night before, and how they had to make a greater, purer sacrifice to appease the Almighty, a sacrifice that would mean an assault on the Vill of Fairbanks.
You know that we have tried to find suitable offerings in the smaller fields, and failed. When there are more people, then we are more certain of making it right. Friend Jordan will guide us, as he has been sent to do. And in order to assist us, these warriors will join us.
While the companions knew that this was coming, it was doubtful that it could be anything other than a complete surprise to the Inuit. The hushed murmurings that swept through the otherwise silent throng were an indication of their depth of feeling. Any kind of verbal communication was at a premium, so the intensity of emotion that had to have been passing through the assembled tribe was obvious. Ryan took in the Inuit with a sweeping eye. Some of them were as inscrutable as ever, but others evinced a certain hostility that he feared could presage nothing but trouble. Thompson raised a hand to silence them.
I know you must be wondering why we need outsiders to help us with our sacred task. But think on this. They came with friend Jordan, who was sent to us by the Almighty. They are part of the same gift from the Lord, proving to us that he is taking our offering seriously and is giving us the chance to redeem ourselves in his eyes and make the great sacrifice that will save our people.
It occurred to Mildred that Doc's garrulousness had to be catching. She couldn't imagine the Inuit chief ever having to make a speech that long before. She could see the hostility in some faces, but she could also see that the majority of the Inuit were thinking about what he said, and that some of those who had been opposed were coming around to his view.
Think they want skin us alive?
That's always a possibility.
Shut it. I think the old bastard is actually convincing them that chilling us might not be their best option.
The old ones used to have a saying, the Lord works in mysterious ways, and sometimes it's a wonder that he performs at all. Guess this is one of those occasions.
McPhee gave a sidelong glance at Jordan.
One thing I do know is that sometimes I don't know what the hell is going on myself, and I talk to the Lord for you. We have to trust, have faith. This
is one of those times.
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.
Graphic Audio is a movie in your mind, but Graphic Audio is playing in folks' minds all over North America. Right now, people like you are experiencing the power of Graphic Audio. For them, it's a totally new way to see an audiobook. Here's what they're saying.
I'm a Deathlands junkie, and I love these books. And I'm going to download every one I can get a hold of. People, just keep it up. You're doing a fantastic job.
I've been collecting these books ever since they've been out, since y'all unabridged them. I enjoy them a lot more. Excellent recording, excellent storyline. Love everything about the books.
I tell you what, if you guys are bored out there driving, this is something you want to listen to. It's got a lot of action, some superb sound effects. You just love it.
Got a comment you'd like to make about Graphic Audio? Got suggestions, criticisms? Give us a call at 1-800-670-5220 or email us at support@cuttingaudio.com. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the container of this Graphic Audio book. We'd like to hear from you, wherever you are. Due to intense violence and sexual situations, Graphic Audio is rated for mature audiences.